Studios in Eugene, Oregon, it's Oregon Update with your hosts, Cliff and Robin. You can join Cliff and Robin by dialing 646-721-9887 or by email at talk@krbnradio.com. And now, here's your hosts, Cliff and Robin.
To say welcome to sunny Oregon, which I never thought I'd be saying those two words.
we have sunny sunshine. I think our weather down here is better than yours. I really do. I mean, you have more or less sunshine than we do. It's bright and shiny and really nice down here. In fact, it's so sunny that I've had to close the drapes because I couldn't read one of my monitors.
Yes, how sunny is it?
It's so sunny. No, it's very sunny.
It's very sunny.
It's nice.
I'm Robin, that's Cliff, and you are listening to Oregon Update on KRBN Internet News Talk Radio.
That's true.
You're wondering what you're doing here. Well, now you know. There's no question at all.
Stick around, you're liable to find out something.
Exactly. And we're anticipating, we're going to have a guest today on the program, so we're anticipating a phone call from a lady who's running for U.S. Senate against Jeff Merkley.
Merkley.
I keep wanting to
Mercury.
No problem saying it. Merkley. Yeah. Now I need new teeth. Anyway.
You keep putting him in a rock band.
I do. Anyway, Miss Jill Ray Perkins, who's running against Jeff Merkley. Yes, and she's going to be on the program a little bit later.
Is she only running against him? Isn't there three of them?
There's a total of five candidates now that are running against him.
Huh.
So, yeah, it's going to be an interesting battle.
It'll be interesting to see what happens.
Anyways, but she'll be on the show a little bit later on this morning, or this afternoon. And other than that, your calls, of course, if you'd like to join us, of course, you can call us right now, 646-721-9887. If you are listening to us on the archives, as thousands of people per week do,
you can still call us at 646-721-9887.
That's right. Not much will happen. But otherwise, you can still participate in the program by sending us an email, talk@krbnradio.com. We finally have a better Facebook address. So if you go facebook.com/KRBN radio, you'll go to our Facebook page. Go ahead and like us there, please. We got 18 likes on there. We could really use a lot more because that way it works better.
That's true. And you know, I just still say all these addresses are so wrong. Just go KRBN.com and
right.
You'll get to us. You'll get to us, period.
KRBNradio.com.
Yeah, krbnradio.com.
Right.
And you don't have to put anything in front of it, anything behind it. Just put that in and the address, and you'll get several ways to get to us.
Right. Do a Google search for KRBN, and you will find us very easily. We're up there on the top of the Google search.
Yeah.
Yes.
Google searches are okay.
Google searches, yes. Anyway, the chat room is open right now, blogtalkradio.com/KRBN. If you'd like to join us there.
It's much better, though, if you just join us on a phone call, because that way it's free.
It is free, and we'd rather talk to you anyways. And we are on iTunes. Just search iTunes, KRBN, and we have our website, krbnradio.com. So we're all over the place waiting for you to give us a call at 646-721-9887. And while we're waiting for Ms. Perkins to call in, we have lots of stuff to talk about in the meantime. And, of course, whatever you feel that you'd like to talk about, we'd like to talk about it, too, more than likely.
Kind of an interesting thing that popped up here. In Indonesia, a volcano was making all kinds of rumblings and noises and things like that, and it rumbled and rumbled and rumbled. And they finally got so bad that they evacuated a whole bunch of people, and it rumbled and rumbled some more. And finally, they let the people back in, and it erupted and killed 14 of them. That was kind of sad. But that was this morning. 14 people were killed in that eruption. And it was bad because they thought it was over with. It just didn't do it. And, you know, don't play possum. You know, if you're going to do something, get up and do it. But this volcano just kept rumbling and rumbling and threatening and threatening and threatening. And finally they gave up and said, well, it's probably not going to happen. So, of course, as soon as it did, that's when it did happen. And that's, wow. It's a volcano that's been around for 400 years. It's been quiet and hasn't done anything until right now. And that's kind of bad. So, anyway, I just thought I would mention that.
I love the description, though, too, you know, the rumble, 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 rumble.
Well, yeah, it's true. Volcanoes do that. They just sit around and rumble and rumble and rumble and did so in spurts. And at times it was worse, and at times it was not as bad. Then they had about 22,000 people were actively displaced, and it still rumbled around and didn't do anything. And then Friday, they decided, okay, we'll let you back in, and you can come home if you want to. You still got some, you know, possibility it could blow up, but we'll let you in. And then Saturday, it blew.
Well, they did say it was a possibility.
They did.
Disclaimer.
Well, yeah, but when the government comes out and says, you know, we think it's okay, you usually take that as good. But there were some people it's just too bad that things like that. Of course, you can never depend on a volcano, you know.
Yeah, I know. They're so unreliable.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Damn volcanoes.
You know, but I hate to hesitate to say that because Mount Rainier is a volcano. Mount Baker is a volcano. We got two monsters sitting right here very quietly waiting to do something.
Oh, we had the Mount St. Helens that went on.
That's just a tiny little thing compared to Mount Rainier. Could you imagine what would happen if Mount Rainier did the same thing? I can remember what happened with all the lava running down across I-5 and things like that. If Mount Rainier were to go up, there would be no I-5, period.
Well, I know that if next time we have another volcano go off, the first thing I'm going to do is invest in any company that makes pantyhose.
What?
Yeah, because the state police were using pantyhose to put over their air intakes on their cars to keep, because, you know, volcanic ash is very, very nasty.
Very, very obtrusive and very, the thing is, with pantyhose, you're going to have to go with lots and lots and lots of them, and it's just almost as easy just to take out and replace your air filter.
Right. Well, they made it as a pre-filter, but the one thing that I have never gotten an answer to is, did they use shear?
No, you don't use shear. My God, woman. You ought to know better than that.
You never know. I mean, they might have got colors that kind of match the uniforms.
What color's your car, ma'am? Blue.
Blue.
Okay.
Yeah.
Maybe blue.
Yeah,
dark blue, light blue.
Yeah, so we need about 2 dozen gross of pantyhose. Do they come in navy?
I want them in mauve.
Mauve. Mauve even.
Oh, so anyway, so much for this show. Anyway.
646-219-887. Write that down in your refrigerator like it does and get some trouble for doing.
Yes. I have it on the front of my refrigerator.
Which especially helps, since he's the co-host of this program, to know what the number is to invite people to give it a call.
646-721-9887.
Nine.
9887. Anyway, that's easy to remember. It's not hard at all, especially if you write it down.
Okay. I have a question for you.
Okay, seven.
Seven. Thank you. Moving right along. All right. I have to admit that I am one of those people that did not purposely snub the State of the Union speech, but because I work night and I totally forgot about it, and to be honest with you, halfway didn't care.
Well, I watched the State of the Union speech. It was so interesting and so captivating. I don't remember what he said, but it wasn't much. He didn't say anything, I don't think, that he hasn't said before and ignored. That's the thing. My problem with this man is he doesn't say things. On television, another show, a different show, they were talking about him, and they were saying that he was instrumental in writing part of his speech. Well, of course he could be instrumental in writing part of his speech. All he has to do is look at last year's speech, or the year before, or preferably somebody else's speech and copy it, because it doesn't say anything, he doesn't pay any attention to it. He does not follow through on things. That's as simple as that. He does what he's interested in doing. The only one different thing, I guess, that he did this year is when it came around to saying, I'm going to write a bill about this, or I'm going to write about that, I'm going to, you know, suggest this or suggest that, and if you don't go along with what I have to say, I'm going to do it anyway. He's just flat told me that he's just going to do it anyway, to hell with you. And, you know, I think that's going a long way towards possibly contributing to his group of people that are going to try to get him out of there. I saw several more websites with the idea of getting rid of, at least to boot him out of office, not getting rid of him, but getting rid of Obama. And there are more than there were before. And he pushed for that. He did that all on his own. He asked for people to make him go away. I mean, granted, he doesn't care. They can't do anything to him almost. They could get rid of him early, I suppose. But it's only a couple of years to go, and it doesn't – well, I got myself in trouble saying it doesn't make any difference. He couldn't do anything in that time anyway. He can, and I'm sure he'll try. But we don't have anybody to put in his place. When it gets right down to it, Joe Biden, I think, could do a better job than Obama does and is quite capable of doing a better job. But – what he would do, I don't know.
He'd probably shoot somebody.
No, he's a pretty stable person. I would have voted if I'd have had him to vote for instead of Obama. I would have voted for him because I would have rather had him in there than Obama. But see, the thing is, this is teaching us a lesson. That's what it's doing. And it's teaching us a lesson saying, you know, you get what you pay for, you get what you ask for. And basically we all of us sat down and said, well, he's the first black president, the first black person that could possibly run and make it as president. So we basically pushed him into being president. And we picked the wrong one, folks.
Well,
we didn't pick someone. We picked someone that was black, not someone who had smarts.
Right. And like you said, we're blinded by color. We were blinded by the fact that we were tired of the current regime. We wanted change. Well, we got that, hope and change.
Well, I don't know that I was that tired of the current regime. I didn't see that the current regime was that bad. But the thing is, we did get change.
Yeah, we did get changed. And what gets me is that, you know, with a lot of talk of impeachment, a lot of senators, you know, talking about wanting to introduce a resolution for impeachment, and to my knowledge, nobody's done it yet.
Oh, yeah, there's been I don't know how official it is. There are several websites that are gathering signatures for his impeachment, and I don't know. what they are. I didn't bother to look at them or run them down or write them down or anything like that, because I don't figure that they're going to accomplish anything, to be honest with you. But it's a possibility. But there are several places on the web that are asking for it.
Well, how come we're not hearing anything in the news about it? I mean, are people so afraid now that, if you don't like our president, you're racist? And so we let them walk all over us?
No, I think the news is well aware of the fact that the websites are there, but I think they're staying away from them on purpose. They don't want to push things unless they think it's going to happen. The news is pretty engendered into what's for real. I mean, they're not going to go out on a limb for anybody.
Okay. Yeah, but, again, once, like I've said many times, this administration has definitely proven it's them and us. We pretty much let them do what they want to do, and they know we can't do anything about it.
Okay, I think we better, but I would want to go a different direction than that. It's not this administration, unless you're considering the president as this administration. He's not. It's the president, and then there's the three houses, or the two houses, and they compromise the administration. The two houses, I don't think, are necessarily behind the president, and they're even less so as of the last week, as of this last speech, from what I understand. I didn't write down anything about the information about this, but from what I saw, his poll numbers have gone down significantly since he gave that speech, and are continuing to go down.
Okay. No, I totally agree.
Well, it's really too bad, because we're not paying attention. I mean, his big thing now is to bring all of our troops home. Well, he's going to do that come hell or high water. He's going to try to do that even if he leaves the Africans or the whoever it is high and dry, because we're going to draw down all these troops and bring them home, and just so he can say he did bring them home. Now, we may have to send them back or something, but I know. See, how do you say no to him?
Well,
I mean,
the thing, no is a hard word when you get down to it. In fact, it doesn't matter. Like you said numerous times, if Congress won't do it, I will.
That's the thing. How do you say no to him? You don't say no to him, because if you say no to him, he's going to overrule you. He can do that. He can over. But the thing is, if the House and the Senate were to literally sit down and say, okay, we're tired of this, and we're going to put a stop to it, they could do that. But, man, we've got to be a real hard ass to do that somewhere.
Well, yeah, and that just brings up the whole point. Our federal government is not responsive to our whims, and they're never satisfied. I mean, even when Obama gets what he wants, he still comes on TV and says, well, the Republicans are doing this, and Congress isn't doing that, and I'm going to have to come out and do this. And I'm sorry, we're supposed to be a representative republic, and it's becoming more of a dictatorship.
Well, he thinks he's a dictator. He thinks he is the man, and he is out to prove it. And he has so far. We've been bullied into it to the point we've been afraid to stop him. I mean, we can stop him. It can be done, but we're going to have to be more. It's going to have to upset a whole lot more people than he has in order to get enough people to go on and do something about it. He's getting there. He's getting more and more people that are asking for signatures, but he's still not quite there yet. He's going to have to, and it's liable to happen before too long, because he's going to overstep his bounds anytime. But maybe that's where he has his genius. Maybe he isn't quite so stupid after all. Maybe his genius is knowing how much to do that you can do and still get away with it.
Well, he's doing something because, like I say, he's got everybody baffled, or everybody scared to death, or everybody's just going along with the wave.
Well, they're going along with it now. You can understand, for the first 4 years, he didn't do anything. He did this two great big bundles of bills, the two big things, and he didn't. They were so big that you couldn't even tell what they were. You know, everybody said, "Oh, we're going to pass them in order to read them and find out what they mean." Then, now that we have passed them, we're finding out what the word did mean wasn't right. I mean, it wasn't even legal, some of the stuff that he put in there or that he allowed other people. See, that's it. He's not doing any of this. I don't believe he's doing any of it at all. He's letting other people do it, and then he's just reading it and passing it on and putting it out there in front of people and letting other people find out whether it's right or wrong and do something about it.
Absolutely. And speaking of right or wrong, I'd like to bring on our guest, candidate for U.S. Senate, Ms. Jo Rae Perkins.
Good afternoon.
Is she right or
Hello.
Wrong?
Well, she's right, of course.
Of course I'm right.
Good afternoon. How are
Hello,
you?
Robin. I am fabulous. I apologize for the road noise, and I'm driving back from Portland back to Albany, so...
So you were on the road?
On the road again.
So who did you meet? What were you meeting with people? Did you meet a group of people? And what kind of opinions did they have?
Well, so today I was at the Americans for Prosperity for Multnomah County. I went to that meeting up in Portland, and then I went over to a meet and greet for another candidate who's running for an Oregon House seat for Tim McMiniman. And chatted with some of his supporters and fans and got to meet new voters. And pretty much the prevailing opinions of everybody is we've got some major changes that need to take place.
Did they say what they are, and is this something you could do something about?
Well, first we got to get in there, get elected. The concern that people are having is this overreach of our federal government. It is just frustrating a lot of people. So that seemed to be the message of the day is to stop the government, both at the federal and at the state level, from stepping on our rights that we have. And that is wrong. So that's what they're talking about is how do we get people elected that are going to get in there and really make a difference and not be part of the same old, same old.
Well, the only way they can do that is to get out and vote.
That's it. And what's happened is when people are voting or when we're talking about, oh, everybody in the Congress needs to be replaced, that all changes when people go to the ballot box. What ends up happening is they end up voting for their current elected official because they go, well, my guy or my gal is doing a good job. It's everybody else's. If you can't vote for everybody else's, you can only vote for the person that you could vote for. So people need to get that in their heads that they don't have the right to vote for all these other people. Hold on 1 second here.
Okay.
I just have to make sure that I'm not going past any unmarked vehicle. Anyway, we have that in Oregon on the freeways, which is another bone of contention I have. So we need to get people to understand, look, if you will start voting out your senator, your representative, who is violating your constitutional rights, that's the only time we're going to start to see a turnaround in this country. Stop re-electing the same people. You're going to get the same result.
That's true. I want to know. I want to say this softly, if possible. You're running for a position. How do we know that you're going to do what you say you're going to do?
That's the question everybody asks me. Well, not everybody, but a lot of people. No matter who you're voting for, you have to step out on faith. That's just the reality of what it is. But the question that voters need to ask themselves is, why would I vote for the same person? I know what they're doing is a horrible job, so why would you let them stay in office? It's time to step out on faith and say, okay, let's take a look at this person. Get to know the candidate. What do they really stand for? And are they more closely aligned with what you believe the role of the government is?
Yeah, that's the important part of the thing is to be able to I'm afraid I'm sort of guilty of exactly what you said. I made all kinds of raised hell about different things, but when it came right down to it, I voted the old people back in. I didn't feel the people that we had were doing anything bad enough that I should kick them out. But I hear what you're saying, and since I get the impression maybe I messed up, I should have just voted for somebody different, at least to give somebody else a different try.
That's it. And the other thing that happens is the longer that people are in office, the more removed they become from the general population. They become to live in they begin to live in insulated lives, to where the only people that are around them are their staffers and the lobbyists, the special interest groups. So they become so far removed from the reality that the rest of us are going through that they're out of touch. And they begin to believe, go ahead.
So are you for term limits?
Am I for term limits? Let me answer that as it's kind of a two-step answer. In my heart, because in my ideal self, my ideal self says people are smart enough to become educated. The problem is they're not being educated. So taking that other part into the equation, I am now heavily leaning towards if term limits were implemented properly, then I am for them. In Oregon, we implemented term limits. We didn't do it the right way. And the challenge that ends up happening is the people in the administrative role, those that work for the government, not the elected officials, and the lobbyists tell the new uninitiated elected people how things are. And so in Oregon, that ended up causing a disaster. So the only way to prevent that from happening is to do it in a stair step or in a staggered implementation to keep that from happening. And we'd have the same problem at the federal level.
How many people are you going to have as a staff when you're in office? We're assuming you're going to be in office.
I don't know. I think I was asked that question the last time, and the answer to that is I don't know. I honestly can't answer that question because I don't know.
Well, my brilliant idea is that we should eliminate all of them. In other words, everyone should be elected every 4 years. And if you want to worry about having a good person not be able to come back, let's say you go two terms, which we'll say is 8 years, and then you have to set it out for 8 years, and then you can go in and run again. That way you could have more time if you wanted to, and if you thought you could do a good job, and then the people who elected you could try and see if they want to get you in again.
Well, and if I lose you, I'm coming up to a cell tower that's infamous for dropping calls. Of course, the Senate, the U.S. Senate seat is a 6-year term. So it depends on if you're speaking U.S. or state. So in Oregon, the U.S. Senate seat is 6 years. Well, that's federal, 6 years. I would look at something that was a 12-year, which in the Senate, that's two terms. You could do 3 terms in the House, which are 2 years each, 1 term in the Senate, there's your 12 years. You could say, yeah, I want to be president. Okay, great. So you can go with one term in the House, 1 term in the Senate, and 1 term as president, there's your 12 years. And not be able to come
back. But some of these people have been in, I, who was somebody's, resigning from office this year after 39 years. That's just ridiculous.
It is, and it's not at all what I thought I set my group. Sorry, listeners, while I'm driving here. That is not at all what the founders had in mind when they put together these terms of office. In their mind, they were limited terms. They weren't these long terms forever until you die offices. They were very clear. They said serve for a limited period of time, not an unlimited period of time. But yet they set themselves up. They tell the people, look, you need me. Look at how wonderful of a job I've done. We have a U.S. representative here in Oregon. He's been in over 20 years, and he does a great job for the veterans. The problem is he's doing the same job over and over and over again. He has the solution, but he will not put the solution in place permanently because then he's not needed.
Yeah. Yeah, that's another thing too. I wonder how many people are doing just enough to get themselves reelected, but not enough to help the people that they're serving.
And that's the problem when you have this. I want this to be my career mentality. For the rest of my life, I've got to do everything I can to hold on to this position of power. That we have ended up in this country of $17.3 trillion in debt. They come up with a problem that we never knew existed before to start off with. Now, with our veterans, yes, we have issues, and we absolutely need to take care of them and put permanent solutions that exist in place. And if they don't exist, let's find them and put them in place. But for the most part, they come up with these problems that they create just so that they can be a problem, just so they can create a job for a friend.
Yeah, yeah.
And then see, you need me because of me, I found this great problem, and if it wasn't for me, we wouldn't know we had this issue.
Well, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, speaking of the budget, do you have any proposals on how to reduce the deficit in the budget? To get more in line.
I do. The first thing we need to start taking a look at is what is the true role of the federal government, and start eliminating or switching over to the state and let the state decide if they want to fund those agencies. That, for example, the U.S. Department of Education, there is nowhere in the Constitution that says that is the job of the federal government. We need to get rid of this U.S. Department of Education, send it back to the states, and let the states decide at what level do they want to deal with it. Personally, I think it needs to get back down to the local level, but it can't be handled from Washington, D.C. We cannot have a one-size-fits-all. We have the Bureau of Land Management. We've got the U.S. Forest Service. There's so many different agencies, it's hard to know where to start. There are, and I'm doing this from memory, 50-some-odd different departments that are doing research on education. And the overlap is just ridiculous. I got a question from one of – redundancy.
That's the big thing.
I got a question from a young man who turned 10 years old today, and the question was posed yesterday. This is a question. Why do we need the Federal Drug Administration and the USDA, U.S. Department of Agriculture? That's from today he's 10, a 10-year-old.
Right.
Well, that's an interesting question from a 10-year-old. Why do we need two agencies, food and drug, food and agriculture? Great question.
The first thing we need to do is hire that boy.
Yeah. Now, here's the funny part. This whole 10-year-old, his mother and father, well, they were past tense, both Democrats. The mother became a Republican after we met. And here this little boy is. who, you know, sees himself as a Democrat is asking a question that a Republican would ask, a conservative would ask. So we need to start taking a look at all these.
Well, that's
so
an excellent point.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say it's an excellent point because you look at the alphabet agencies, you know, we have the FBI, NSA, ICE, and a lot of them are doing the exact same job.
Redundancy.
Yeah. Well, it's overkill.
Right, and it is, and we've got to start. You know, we have all these wars, the war on terror, the war on poverty, the war on education. Maybe we should stop being in wars.
Most of the
federal government is redundant. Most of the federal government is money being spent that is not necessary. And we've got enough. The thing is, if all these people that are a part of the federal government, that are employees of the federal government, we're going to be in a world of hurt to put all these people to work if we let them go.
They will be, and hopefully there'll be some people that will be entrepreneurs and think about what other things can they do. But here's the beauty of it all. When we start cutting back the size of the federal government and we start loosening up the money and lower our taxes, that gives more spendable income to people, which creates jobs automatically. Now, I actually balanced President George W. Bush's 2005 budget. I did a 10% across-the-board cut in every department except the military. 10%. Every department can easily afford a 10% decrease in their budget.
Some of them a lot more than that.
Well, just starting with the when you come up to the fiscal year, that you have to spend the money so you don't lose the money for the next fiscal year.
Yeah, for the first time in who knows when, we should just give the money back. Anybody ever thought of that? She must be behind a tree.
Must be. But no, it's a good point. You know, there is a lot of waste in government, just a 10% cut. And as to the argument about some employees losing their jobs, well, kind of look at it this way. Look at it. Yeah, we lost her. Kind of look at it as if you are a company and your company is failing, you have a choice of, one, keeping your employees on and taking a loss and possibly the company going bankrupt, or two, laying some people off and, you know, reducing your cash flow enough that you can work to build the company back up and to rehire them.
Yeah, there's a possibility of doing that, and that's a good idea, the idea of being possibility of rehiring them. But I believe that there should be a place that they could go. For even, let's say, our military, we've got people in the military, a huge amount of people in the military that we could bring home, but we've got to find a place to put them to work before we do that. So I think we'd be better off if we brought them home, get out of the places we are overseas, and then, if nothing more, then just put them to work, you know, spending the same amount of money and just let them sit on the border and watch what's happening or something, just whatever, but just bring them home. That's got to save some money just right there.
Okay, we have Jill Ray back.
I made it back. Didn't I? You said that, didn't I? Only place I know on I-5 in Oregon that does that. I think that could have some valid sense. You'll skip right over to the immigration issue that we have. We've got to start protecting our borders, and that's protecting our country is the number one goal of the federal government.
Right.
We need to. We're gonna. Yeah. We just have to, and. We've gone into places where I can't say it made 100% sense to be there. If the government did not ask us to come in to help, what right do we have to go in there and overthrow a government? We should not be the world's watchdogs.
That's the thing. We seem to think that we should have the control of everything. We seem to think that we know better than everybody, and that's not really the case. There are other people who have been in, let's face it, almost all of these countries have been around longer than we have, and they've got to have some smarts somewhere. We're not the only ones who know how to do things or how to be a part of things and how to run things. So let's turn it back over to them.
Well, exactly. If we take, let's take Syria. Syria is, I think, an excellent current example. We have Karzai, who some people say is a despot. Other people like him. The question is, what makes him a despot? In Syria, underneath Karzai, you can go to your Christian, you can go to your Christian church. You can carry your Bible. You're not going to get killed for doing that. The insurgents come in, and we've got people in the United States going, oh, well, we need to be defending with the insurgents to kick out Karzai. But yet the insurgents have gone into Syria, and they have murdered Christians and burned down Christian churches. Now, on the surface, you tell me which government would you rather be under?
Well,
the
simple
one
that is,
allows you your religious freedom, or the one that says, no, you can only practice Islam. And I'm not picking on Islam. I'm using that as an example because that's already been proven that they've done that this last year. So.
Well, I agree that we shouldn't be I just don't think we should be making up their mind for them. In other words, they were most of them. Well, I don't want to know. I think they were okay before. We do things halfway. We go in there, we say they shouldn't do this and they shouldn't do that, and then we do it halfway, and then we screw things entirely. And so we should either get in there and take over or get the hell out.
Yeah, we it's not nation building the way that people think of nation building. It's nation building. You go in and you take over everything, and you stay present. You know, there are some big stuff that we've done, and I think that we're right. But when we get into different countries, they have their own civil wars they have to fight. We had our own civil wars that we've had to fight on our own soil here to decide what type of governing that we want to see. And I think we need to bring that up to the countries to decide if there is enough proof that we know who the good guys are, we know who the bad guys are.
We fought our own civil war. We fought it by ourselves. We did it for
exactly.
ourselves. And we're the only ones who can blame. We need to let them do that for themselves, not
Absolutely.
Us going in there
agree.
And saying we.
Yes, and that's by weapon.
Yeah.
So we have a furious type of an ordeal. Which
no, I don't think we should supply weapons or anything. They've got what they've got. They know what they've got to work with, and we should keep our buns out of there entirely. That's their problem, and that's their privilege, not their problem.
And what I want to do is get back to the question of immigration real quick here, since we started on that. Joe Ray, you know, the president. And there's a lot of talk of amnesty and whatever, and the president is giving the attitude of, if Congress won't do it, I will. Immigration is a tough question. How do you feel about that and about amnesty, et cetera?
Well, it used to be up until about 1974, I think. So forgive me if my date is off a little bit. We only allowed 250,000 people to come to this country each year legally. Underneath President Reagan, over 1 million people were given amnesty, and now we're talking 11 million people. There are those people that came here illegally. They've been here, let's say, for the last 25 to 30 years, so post-Reagan. That takes us right back to 1984. They've had children, they've raised their families. Many of them actually have been paying taxes. They're just using somebody else's Social Security number. I can see a possibility of saying, okay, you've been here. This is what you've been doing. To send a certain group back would be next to an impossibility for them to go back because they have nothing to go back to wherever they're from, then let's find a way to make them a permanent resident, but they don't get to be a citizen. They don't get a pass to citizenship. Their children, it's a different story because their children are born here by constitutional law. They're a citizen. But their parents should be given permanent residency. They still can't vote. But now they're here as a permanent guest of the country. And I can wrap my head around that. But we've got to start securing the borders. We've got too many people that once you come to this country legally, and they can't. The problem with this current bill, from what I've read, is the people that want to come here, they're coming from socialist countries, and mostly the young people, they don't know anything different. They don't have an allegiance to our Constitution, which I understand is a cultural thing. But they've come from socialist-leaning countries, so in their mind, it makes sense for the government to be providing for their medical, for their education, for all these things that those who believe in freedom and liberty are saying, no, you need to be able to earn enough and provide for your family. So we need to be really careful when we are saying, yes, let's bring in all these young immigrants from these socialist countries because they're going to vote for socialist ideals. Beck and Coulter just put a very good piece out on that this week. And I recommend people to go to her website and read that. A shout out there for Ann Coulter. Boy, it made a lot of sense. It's just another thought that we just don't think about. So her question is, why would the Republican Party in the House say, hey, let's give amnesty or let's make immigration easier for all these people when they already know that they lean to the socialist agenda, which we're trying to fight?
Do you think that we should make it a requirement for people to be legal to, I want to say be assimilated, but be, I can't think of the word.
Well, I really feel that the whole thing boils down to we need to enforce our laws.
We do. We need to enforce our laws. Now, again, that's why, you know, we also need to not be cold-hearted. And so that's where we have, you know, I don't want to be painted as some cold-hearted woman that all of a sudden all the illegals back to wherever it is they came from. Again, let's qualify that. They've been here a long time. They're working. Most of them are not. By the fact they're here illegally, they're not doing criminal action. Then let's find a way to make them permanent residents, which means that if they violate our laws outside of, you know, now they're a permanent resident, then they would be deported. Does that make sense?
Well, the point is if we were to enforce our laws, they wouldn't want to be here. They'd go home.
Well, they would go home. So for the ones that are here fairly recently, then they need to go back. They're here illegally. And the other problem that we have is we have set up a system. If you'll take a look, a lot of people are here working as migrant workers. They're working in the fields, and part of that reason is because our federal government said, oh, kids can't work in the fields. Now, I don't know, Cliff, Robin, did you guys ever go out and pick beans or strawberries as kids to make money?
I did. In fact, I even picked rhubarb with a very sharp knife.
Okay. And
oh, when
so
you were much
Robin,
too young to do that.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. It probably ruined you for life. How could we do such a thing?
Totally. You know, how much for something that could have cut my finger off very easily?
Yeah. So you learn pretty quickly as a child, oh, this is sharp, don't do that. And so what's happened, and in talking to people that are in the farming industry, they're going, the problem is we've told, our federal government has told our children that they are too good to work in the fields. So
yeah,
we've lost an entire generation of people who've worked in the fields. Timber is not any different. Our timber people, the same thing. You can't cut down the tree. So
right.
you know, although that hasn't caused an immigration issue of illegal workers, if we need to do a guest worker program, which, by the way, Oregon has a guest worker program, most people don't know that, but there is one in place, to where we've got people coming here to work legally, returning back to their homeland legally. They've got all the proper documentation. I'm okay with that. If you'll bet, let's take a look at where we are economically. The government is trying to tell us we're out of the recession. Folks, we're not out of the recession. And Obamacare, now, you know, I just flipped subjects on you, but Obamacare is going to shove us further or right back into a recession that is barely recovered, if it has recovered. In Oregon, it is not recovered to where we should be. So, you know, that's going to cause more problems. Maybe people are going to get hungry enough and go, you know what, I'm going to go out and I'm going to work in the fields and I'm going to work hard and start.
Okay, but when they go out and they work in the fields, when they go out and work in the fields, are they working for less than minimum wage? Are they working for less than our law requires?
If they're working, above board, most of the farmers are paying them. They are paying them according to legal laws because the employers don't want to go to jail. Most people don't realize that. So they're either paying them piecework, which they can legally do, and it's up to the person picking the berries or shoveling the gravel, whatever it is they're doing. Well, that's not a good example. But where they are being paid by the pound. And that is perfectly legal. Because you're not being told you cannot make the minimum wage in Oregon. You actually can make way more than that.
One of the things I'm concerned about is this: with the new Obama rules and laws and whatever, we've got an awful lot of people that are actually losing full-time employment. The employers are putting them on to work less than 80 hours or 40 hours a week or whatever it is. But they're putting them less than that, and because they don't have to pay
the insurance. Yeah. I talked with some employees at O'Reilly's Auto Parts not too long ago. Their hours got cut back to 27 hours a week. So I did some quick math. They were working 30. That was their normal work week. So just figuring $10 an hour, that means that they were losing $30 a week. That means that they're losing over $120 a month. Losing that $120 a month pre-tax, roughly $100 a month after tax for a lot of people, spells disaster.
That can be groceries.
Well, on top of that,
groceries,
you know,
car insurance,
when they were talking
gas in their car.
Right. When they were talking about just increasing the utility rates, you heard stories about $10 a month, which is a lot of money to a lot of people. Well, you know, turn off your porch light or cut back. Obamacare, assuming you don't fall into that low poverty level, you know, where you get the subsidies or Medicare, whichever, there are stories that people's health care has tripled per month. And for a lot of people, like Cliff and I, for example, you know, $50 more a month is a lot of money. And some of us just don't have it.
Exactly. It is a lot of money. I actually went online and looked at the rates for my husband and I, and we have not signed up. We've not had health insurance since 2009. Our premiums with the subsidy depend on if they counted our pre-tax, because my husband's self-employed, or our net income from my husband's business. Our subsidy was between $500 and $800 a month. And our premiums were between $800 and $1,300 a month. Well, when I did the math, we were still going to be paying, no matter what, we'd be paying $500 a month for our health insurance, and our deductible would be a minimum of $2,500.
Wow.
That's outrageous.
Wow.
Absolutely outrageous.
Well, let me ask you this, then.
It is unsustainable.
A lot of people, okay, like myself, I'm fortunate that I have insurance through my company at this time, but on the other side of the coin, if I also decide to start a business myself, you know, I'm immediately faced with this having to get insurance that I may not be able to afford as a new startup, or face paying the penalty at the end of the year. Now, if I'm not mistaken, the Obamacare was originally designed as if you didn't have insurance, you paid a fine. And then the Supreme Court changed it to a tax, but isn't Congress the only one that can create a tax?
Yes. So Supreme Court legislated from the bench. When the Roberts Court came out with that decision, he left off a very important piece, and I don't know, because I haven't talked to him, if he expected that the House would come back and say this law is now null and void because it was not passed as a tax, it was passed as a penalty. The Supreme Court should have invalidated it at that point in saying this is indeed a tax. This was not voted on as a tax. It indeed was voted on as a penalty. Therefore, we find that this is illegal. We don't know why Roberts made the decision that he made and why the majority, and it was split, but why there was, it was, obviously we know the result was that the majority went with Roberts on his opinion.
Well, the simple thing is, if the president doesn't have to follow the rules, why should he?
And also, yeah, put it out there that if you're elected, is there anything you can do to kind of help change it?
Yes. One of the things is, until we get rid of the current president, we cannot overturn the Affordable Care Act. There's no way we can do it, except if we have enough votes in the House and in the Senate to override a veto. That's the only way that we can do that. So we have to have a two-thirds majority in the House and in the Senate to override a veto. So that's...
When was the last time we ever got two-thirds?
When was the last time
we ever got two-thirds majority? And it just doesn't happen anymore.
It doesn't. So we're looking at 2016 before we can do anything. So, of course, we're hopeful that the insurance industry, because they're smart enough, will have their backup plans in place. The other challenge that we have, see, part of the Affordable Care Act is the insurance industries are guaranteed a bailout.
Yeah.
So,
if you never have to pay for anything, you don't have to worry about what you're doing. If you don't have any penalties, then you're free.
Yes.
And... okay. Also, I want to get in here because I want to respect Joe Ray's time as well. Joe Ray, there's been a lot of talk, like in New York, for example, on some change subjects here, about the Second Amendment, where like in New York City, they're requiring people to register their guns, and if they don't qualify within the list, they got to turn their guns in. How do you feel about the attacks on the Second Amendment or the Second Amendment in general?
Our founders were very clear on who the militia was and who should own firearms. The states have the right to say that you need to register your firearm. The state does not have the right to take away your firearm because then they're violating your constitutional right of the Second Amendment. So you have this split thing going on. We actually had that exact same thing happening here in Oregon. Well, I don't want to say exact, but very similar bill that is before our short session, to where they want all firearms, even if you receive them as a gift, to be registered. In my opinion, at the state level, they are definitely overreaching their role. But again, that's a states' rights issue. But they do not have the right to take away somebody's firearm, and that is a constitutional right.
So what do you say to the people that say that we'd be a lot safer community if we either regulated or got rid of guns altogether?
I say look at the statistics. The numbers are there. It's proven. Look at Chicago. Look at Washington, D.C. Up until a couple of years ago, Washington, D.C. was a gun-free zone, murder capital of the country. Gee, isn't that nice, our nation's capital, that it was, you know, it was illegal to own firearms within the district. New York, no firearms. They're making it illegal. But yet there's all these murders going on it is proven over and over and over again that where firearms are legal, the incidence of murders and suicides by firearm go down dramatically. There is a direct correlation. And people need to understand that. See, a gun does not kill people. If you load your gun and you leave it on the porch, it's not going to jump up and shoot the person walking down the street. This is not
That's true. And there's a lot of stories that people with concealed carry have actually thwarted a crime that could have gone worse if they hadn't.
Exactly. So they go, well, but they're assault weapons. Well, hello, so is my car.
Yes.
So is a pop bottle. So is a baseball bat.
But wait a minute. Let's look at other countries. Let's look at the other countries who can't have the guns, where the guns are illegal, where they have to be registered and all this, that have where the highest incidence of gun killings in the world. I mean, we're in terrible shape. We've got 10 times as many people killed by guns in the United States as almost any other country in the world, and we're the ones who have all the guns.
Cliff, I'm going to disagree with you. If you take some of those countries, you have to understand they live under martial law. It's a totally different issue that they have. If you take a look at, and I want to say it is Switzerland, and again, because I'm not in front of my computer and I'm doing this out of the archives of my brain, they have a 98% gun ownership rate, and their incidence of murder is extremely low, and gun violence is extremely low because of their high percentage of people that own guns. People know that
they don't have, if everybody owns a gun, you better be careful.
Well, but the thing is that you're not going to go in and start shooting up places if you're going to be the one that gets shot. But there's another problem that we have going on in this country, and then I'm gonna go because I got to get right back out the door. I just pulled in the driveway, and I got to run in the house and run back out the door for another meeting. Is the people that have done these mass murders, Columbine, Sandy Hook, the theater in Colorado, I believe Kip Kinkle, and I might be wrong on Kip Kinkle down in Springfield, Oregon. But the other ones that I mentioned, they were all on some sort of a mind-altering drug.
Yeah.
Ritalin.
Really, basically, our murders and our accidents of that sort really have nothing to do with gun ownership, I don't think. You can go out and get a gun regardless of whether you're legally or illegally or whether you steal it or whether you buy it. It's easy to get one.
Okay, well, wrapping up here,
right,
how do people get a hold of you?
People can get a hold of me on my website at PerkinsForUSSenate.com or OregonsNextSenator.com. Go on my website. There's links there for contact. They can find me on Twitter at Perkins, the number 4, Senate. So that's PerkinsForSenate on Twitter. Those are the easiest ways to get a hold of me. Is either through the website or send me a tweet, and I'll get back to you. I'm on Facebook
right now.
It's all confusing. I do. If I see the message, I get back to people. So sometimes I don't see the message, but I know I've got, I just looked a little bit ago, there was at least 10 direct tweet messages to me, and I know my inbox is filling up right now. But that's how people get a hold of me, PerkinsForUSSenate.com or OregonsNextSenator.com. Go to the contact page, send me an email.
And we're,
well, thank you. Thank you very much for talking to us.
And where
all
can
right,
they go if they'd
you.
Like to donate? And where can they go if they have somebody would like to donate?
They can go to my website, OregonsNextSenator.com or PerkinsForUSSenate.com, and click on the donate link. And we take PayPal, Visa, MasterCard, and American Express. And there's also instructions on the donate page if they want to mail a check.
Excellent. Well, Joey, again, thank you so much for coming on the program, and I hope that you'll come back again and invite people. If you have questions for her, don't hesitate to ask. You can send. We'll put links to Joey's websites on our website, so you can send her a message or send us an email, and we'd like to have you back on the show in the future.
All right. Sounds good. I look forward to it. Thanks, Robin. Thanks, Cliff. Have a great day.
You too. Have a great day.
All right. Thank you so much.
Okay. Bye-bye. Bye.
So that was Ms. Jill Ray Perkins, who is a candidate for U.S. Senate running against Jeff Merkley. Hey, I said it right, along with a few other people. So, again, check her out. We'll put links to her website on our page so you can find it easily. And
or if you just want to send us a message, we'll pass it on.
Exactly.
No matter how.
So you can also, like I say, our email, talk@caribbeanradio.com, Facebook, Caribbean Radio. So, and again, we'll forward those on to Joe Ray, and we'll have a more questions, because we had some of the questions we asked were submitted. And so, again, don't be afraid to ask. You know, she is, like Cliff asked, you know, does she answer questions? Yeah, absolutely, she does.
Well, she has interest. She thinks about her answers, too. I've noticed that. She does think about her answers rather than just answering willy-nilly.
Right. Absolutely. So check her out. And again, don't be afraid to ask. But she does need your help. And, I mean, she's up against a couple people with money behind them. And Joe Ray, you know, I have had the pleasure of meeting with her several times for coffee one-on-one. And, I mean, that alone, I think, is impressive as far as somebody reaching out and being available. Her questions, these questions here are not scripted. You know, we weren't given a list of things that we can't talk about, and you know, we cornered her on a few things, and I think she did pretty good. Where other people, they are coming out and saying, no, we can't talk about this, or I want you to talk strictly about that, and this is not.
No, if somebody gives me a list of questions I can ask, I immediately ignore them.
Right. So
by the way, it's Chinese New Year.
It is.
Yeah, students at the University of Oregon are celebrating Chinese New Year. Dance crew is performing during the second act of the night. Three Chinese student groups are ringing in the start of the new year, and one of the years of it's the year of the horse, by the way, if you're interested.
Well, unless you're in the U.S., it's the year of the ass.
No, it's the whole horse.
Whole horse. I just think depending on where you are.
True. But anyway, I just thought it'd be interesting that you need to know that this is the Chinese New Year. So red and gold are the nice colors. Red and gold are good colors.
Well,
they're exciting.
Well, they're better than yellow and green. Oh, did I say that?
I'm not going to say a word.
Blast
it. I just sit here and ignore those. I just, you know, it's red and gold are good.
Well, I say that because I'm not actually into football, so I
you see, I'm so not into it. I didn't even know what it meant. So, I mean, I assumed it was the color of UFO or something.
But moving right along, 646-721-9887, 21 minutes remaining in the program. If you would like to call and there's anything you'd like to talk about, if you missed the interview with Ms. Jill Ray Perkins running for U.S. Senate, again, you are probably listening to us on the archive, so you know how to do it. And again, I'd like to encourage people, if you'd like more interviews with Ms. Perkins or with others of this type, you know, we'd love to hear from you. talk@caribbeanradio.com. And also let us know, we've always put this question out, you know, when are you listening to us? We get some demographics, but any input that you can give us so we can help better fit our listeners' timetable is really appreciated. And, of course, comments, pro and con. Except for the ones that keep saying, when are you guys going to go away? Well, we're not going to do that. So we're like a bad headache. We keep coming back.
So just in case you're interested, the U.S. dollar is falling apart.
Good segue.
Yeah, right. I thought it was. It immediately takes us
it does.
To
it takes
place
us that and into another direction.
Right to where we need to be.
Yeah.
OPEC is true. The U.S. dollar, I mean, OPEC has decided that it's going to use the yen, the Chinese dollar, to do business with instead of the U.S. dollar. And it could be that would be a real bad thing for the U.S. dollar. I mean, I don't know if we could exist if the U.S. dollar wasn't held in such high regard with everybody. And this is the beginning. And Iran, of course, is pushing all the way. They're trying to get the OPEC to shift away from the pricing of oil in dollars entirely, and instead now they, I don't think they want it in Iran money, whatever that happens to be, but they're trying to encompass the euro. They want it to be a part of the euro, although they're saying that the Chinese dollars are stepping in there, and the Chinese economy isn't doing that well, from what I understand. So I don't understand why the Chinese are involved in this, but it's an awfully big country, and a lot of people are using Chinese money, so it could be.
Well, and that's an interesting point too, because the dollar is, like you say, the world currency. And we've already lost, thanks to this administration, our AAA credit rating in some instances. And, you know, other countries are like you just said, is that we're starting to change, not use the U.S. dollar anymore. And that's kind of a signal about how, well, basically how people don't feel about the U.S.
You know, it mentions here that the currency could end up being crude oil, not dollars at all. And that's an interesting thing, because we are, in the United States, interestingly enough, almost divorcing ourselves from the other countries in the way of crude oil is concerned. We're manufacturing and doing our own. Our energy deposits are, we're using our own, and we're not using other people's. We're doing more oil wells here in the United States, but we're also using other things. And so, I don't know, it could be a real drastic change and a real interesting amount of changing going on in the next year or so to see what happens. What is the Kuwait or the United Arab Emirates, these other countries, what are they going to do? Right now they're tied to the dollar, but are they going to jump off a dollar and go somewhere else? Because most of these places have crude oil, have big oil wells and things like that. They could jump over and use crude as the actual money, but somehow or another it has to be equivalent of something, doesn't it?
Well, that depends. I mean, look at the new fad coming up. Now, I admit I know nothing about this, but called the Bitcoin.
Yeah.
It's been around for a while, but I've never looked into it. But I hear, and I'm actually seeing local businesses that are starting to accept Bitcoins.
That's another thing. The big thing coming around here is, let's face it, the Internet is having a huge, huge influence on what's happening in the world, and not just for the dollar, but for many, many other things. But even the dollar, the people are becoming very, very involved in. To me, it's fake dollars or pie in the sky dollars. I mean, to go for bitcoins, because you've got nothing to back it up. I don't know what would be there to back it up. You know, of course, if you want to get right down to it, the U.S. dollar is not based on anything anymore either, except the U.S.
Yeah, that's true. And, you know, it's just numbers in a bank, because we're not using Fort Knox anymore, the gold standard, to back up a representative. And that's why they can just go ahead and print the dollar and affects inflation and everything. It's just numbers. You know, like, for example, I get paid by direct deposit, and then some of my bills get paid by paid electronically. I use a debit card. Just recently, I actually took $20 out of the bank and was holding this, well, it used to be money. And when I go to the store now, and if I use cash, I'm going, how does this work?
Yeah, really. But, yeah, and some people hesitate before they want to take cash.
Right. Well, there's some place that I actually ran into a restaurant that would not take cash.
Is that right?
But the point is that it's all numbers. It's all numbers going through some computer system. And what value really does that numbers have? You know, I go to work, they put numbers in my bank, numbers come out of the bank, goes into somebody else, and, I mean, when you get right down to it.
Yeah. Well, it's going back to the bitcoins. I say that I don't believe that bitcoins are anything, that they aren't backed up by anything. But actually, they're backed up by everybody's dollars are in the internet now. They're online. And so bitcoins might obviously end up being the currency that's relevant to everything, relevant, and that might be the beginning of a world currency. I've heard about everybody worried about a world currency for years and years and years. This may actually be the beginning of it. I don't know if I'm prepared for that.
Well, I mean, we've already, you know, they're worried about the mark of the devil. Well, when you're born, you're given a social security number, so there's your number.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and as far as being traced, you don't have a household phone much anymore. You've got a cell phone, and every cell phone is, unless the battery's taken out of it, communicates with the cell tower. That's how it knows where you're at, or at least when you turn on, it goes, "Hi there," and so
yeah, that's even traces you more closely than your home phone used to.
Yeah.
The home phone used to bring you to the house, and all you had to do was go away and not be there. But
yeah.
Nowadays, how do you go away? You usually have the phone in your pocket. You're either going to have to throw the phone away, and that's I'm seeing happen on television and movies more and more often. They'll be saying, you know, your telephone number is such and such, or we're tracing you by the telephone, and people just throw the phone away.
Yeah.
And that's how they get lost. They throw the phone away. So what are you going to do?
Well, and, you know, there's no privacy anymore, per se. I mean, we have facial recognition cameras on the side of the road now, even in Lane County here. You know, you're tracked, you're monitored, especially if you have anything to do with the Internet. And here's the thing that now, so some people disagree with me in this little conspiracy thing, but this is actually based on fact. My theory was back on one of the shutdowns, the one that Obama held a hard line on, he would not budget all on Obamacare. They, you know, people have to go to this website to sign up. Well, here's my theory to kind of reiterate, is that whenever you go to a website, like whether you go to krbnradio.com or any other site, but when you come to our site, I mean, Cliff can tell you. In fact, Cliff, if you want to give him a quick example, what information do we obtain just by somebody coming to our website?
Oh, boy, I don't have it up in front of me, but we obtain, I don't know.
For one thing, we get your IP address. We may not know your house address, but we know what city you're in, who's your carrier. We have some demographics of you. But what happens in a lot of websites you go to, even if it's NBC News or ABC or whatever website, it puts a cookie in your computer. And what advertising agencies is goal to them is to track your internet surfing habits, because with one cookie, they can tell what site you were on, how long you were on it, and when you came back to that site again. So it kind of gives them an idea. Okay, well, when you go sign up to the government's website for Obamacare, not only just by visiting the website does it put a cookie in your computer, you are also offering them your name, your Social Security number, your phone number, where you work. So now they have a full demographics in addition to what advertisers are wanting, and that's practically a direct link to your computer and your surfing habits.
Yeah. Anything you buy, if you buy it online, and nowadays more and more and more people are buying online. The amount of money spent online this year, this Christmas, was double what it was the year before, and it was getting pretty high. We're actually spending a huge amount of money online, and that's, to me, that's scary, because there's nothing that they don't know about you when you spend it online.
Exactly, and the information can be stolen. A lot of people don't know. I mean, yes, you have about every home has a computer or tablet or somewhere linked to the internet. And what a lot of people don't realize, because you don't know, you go down to Best Buy or whatever and you buy a computer, here you go, plug it in, is that when you go purchase something or when you sign up for something on the internet, the thing to look for is up in the address bar, and that's where you type in www.whatever, is that what you want to look for is on the left-hand side that where it says HTTP. You want to be sure there's an S after that. That means it's a secure connection. It's an encrypted connection. If you don't see that and you're putting in personal information, that information is open for anybody that wants to steal it.
Well, see, I disagree with you there. Even if it's the canvas in front of it, it's still open. It's still available to almost anybody except the people who really don't care to get the information that they want.
Well, it makes it hard because the S means that it's encrypted.
I know that, but it's almost anybody can get into that encryption. It's so easy.
Well, anybody can get into your computer. Is like when I went to college for this stuff. You know, they showed us how easy it is to intercept passwords and to put keylogger programs in. So you know, just typing on your keyboard, they can intercept and find out what you're doing. Some companies themselves have keylogger programs to monitor their employees. So yes, nothing is 100% secure. But
anytime I go to sign up for anything or to go into anything, I put in my password, and almost always a little thing pops up and says, "Sure, you want to use that password? You sure don't want to use one that's actually safe, or you don't want some?" Because I don't really care that my password is a real pain in the butt to me, because I wouldn't care if I didn't have to have one. I mean, I don't put anything on the internet that I don't want people to know about. And you know, I put on the only financial things I put on the internet is how much I pay for rent. And I don't care if people know how much I pay for rent or not. It's too much. But still, that's about the only thing I put online as far as how much is concerned. The only other thing is, and this is the thing that gets to me, they email me the amount of money they send me each year, each month. And so consequently, that's on the internet. So, you know, it doesn't make much difference what you do. People are going to be able to get it if they want it.
Oh, that's true. It just depends on how easy you make it for them. But the point is, just be careful.
Yeah.
Use common sense. Yeah. Just because it pops up, you know, you're surfing a website and pops up and says, asking you for your name or whatever, just don't blindly start filling it out. I mean, I've known people that do that, and I ask them, why do you do that? Well, because it told me to. Okay.
Yeah.
So just because it came up and told you to do it, you're just blindly doing it?
Well, for one thing, when you do something like that, boy, does your email get full.
Yes, exactly. Which brings up another point. Never click on unsubscribe when you get spam.
Oh, yeah, because that guarantees that they will.
Right, because a couple things happen here while we're talking internet. When some addresses are randomly generated, some are created from a list. When you send an email out, and I'm sure everybody has had this before, if it's a bad email, it'll get bounced back as an email daemon says that, you know, I can't deliver this. Okay, that immediately says, you know, this is not a valid email address and gets scratched off the list. If it doesn't get bounced back, that says, okay, well, there's a good chance that this email is valid. So you're going to still get spam from it. Now, if you hit the unsubscribe button, you just confirmed that this email is a valid and used email address, and now you're worldwide.
Yeah. I for years and years and years used to do that, and then I stopped doing it. My email has actually gone down because of that, at least partly because of that, I'm sure.
Yeah.
But I'm getting less email than I used to. But mostly because I don't write to anybody or return anybody's email. So
I can attest to that, by the way.
Poor Robin. I never talked to her.
Yes. The other thing that's bad, too, is that when you use a public email, or not public, but like Yahoo, Google, and some of the others, that they do scan your emails and they try to send you advertising to match the type of things that you talk about. So, but that,
even if you don't, I have an email that is cliff@cliff.org, and they still do that.
Yes. So thank you.
Maybe not as much.
Thank you for giving everybody your email address. But
no, I'm going to give it.
Yes. But anyways, 5 minutes remaining in the program, 646-721-9887. Still time to take your calls and offer your opinions on what we've been talking about today or what you'd like to talk about. We're all ears. And 646-721-9887. And a reminder that we are on Saturdays at 4 p.m. Pacific time if you want to catch us live, and available all over the place, just type in KRBN on your Google search and you will find us. So there.
Just sitting there waiting to talk to you or to answer you or to well, whatever. That I mean, because we'll talk about anything, just about anything. There are a couple of things that I won't talk about, and religion is one of those. I don't really like to talk about religion because you never talk about religion without getting into an argument. That's the fastest way to get to hate somebody is to talk about religion and argue about religion. So I don't.
Yes. We're religious about that.
Yeah. Exactly. Exactly. But I'll talk about almost anything else, so that's no problem. There's plenty of things out there that we can talk about, some of them even legitimate.
Anyways, in closing up, again, I'd like to thank our guest for coming on the program today, candidate for U.S. Senate, Ms. Jill Rae Perkins. You can check out our website, perkinsforussenate.com.
And by the way, if Jeff Mercury wants to come on, we'll let him.
Yes, and I'll try to say his name right.
Merkley.
Twitter, Perkins, P-E-R-K-I-N-S, the number 4, Senate, if you want to check her out on Twitter. And she does answer questions, so don't hesitate. If you got a question you always wanted to ask somebody that's running for office, you know, send her an email or send her a text. She will get back to you. You know, don't get upset if it takes a day or two because she is pretty busy. She's got a pretty tight schedule, but she will answer you. Yeah, which is pretty cool. But check her out, and again, tell her that you also heard her on this program, and encourage her to come back for more sessions. And like Cliff was saying, if anybody else would like to as well, come on the program.
If you want to be technical, anybody that's running for anything, we'll put you on. That's no problem at all.
Anybody still run for dog catcher?
I don't know. Is that an elected official?
Yeah. It should be. Because if nothing else, I like to hear the debates.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. Well, I caught 3 golden retrievers last year.
Yeah, and they hate you, too.
And they hate you.
I was talking to one of those guys, and they just had nothing good to say about you.
Yes. Yeah, that's right. We want the canine vote.
Ready or not.
Ready or not.
We're about time to be done.
We are. So, again, like I say, if you are listening to the program on the archives, you can still participate by, you know, again, Facebook at facebook.com/KRBN Radio. Like us on there, please. We could use the numbers. And also, you can send us emails, talk@KRBNradio.com. And we will be back again. 4 p.m. Pacific time on Saturdays now.
Hard to remember that, 4 p.m.
4 p.m. And also check us out on Blog Talk Radio as well, blogtalkradio.com/KRBM, as we are having some special programs sometimes during the week and replays if you miss something. So a lot of stuff going on. And also check out our webpage, KRBNradio.com, and we'll see you next week.
Bye. Be sure to check us out on the internet at www.krbnradio.com or email us with your show ideas at talk@krbnradio.com. This is KRBN Internet News Talk Radio.